Hi, it's Juliet, the rabbi, recording in New York City. Today I'm going to talk to you about stretching and coming late to the game because you're stretching. Maybe. Not really. It's kind of a joke. You'll get it. This morning, I think, was the first time I cried while hearing the story of a family from Kibbutz Be'eri, you know, the one that was attacked on October 7th on the southern border with Gaza, where all of these, you know, peace-loving kibbutzniks lived. And maybe I'm late to the game with the crying, I mean, or crying about, yeah, while hearing stories. Maybe it's not the first time, but it felt like the same time, like the first time. But what made me cry, I guess, was a little different from before. I mean, sure, I was listening to the personal story of pain and trauma of this specific family, and of course it was heartbreaking, but it also offered a ray of hope. It was more than their own personal story. It was also indirectly about the loss of an intentional way of living, a communal way, an ideal, where they described how all of their income goes into this common pool and everybody benefits from it. Everyone has their needs met, whether it's for their health or food or education, friendship. It's all there. Everybody has an equal share in all of it. You can go to the dining hall and eat with people or not. You know, if you feel like cooking, you can stay in your house. If you don't, you can go. And everyone plays a role in uplifting the community and supporting the community. Everyone gets an education. Everybody has healthcare. And nobody's alone. People are never alone. I was listening last week to the Ezra Klein, oh no, this is a few weeks ago, the Ezra Klein show. And they were talking about how people are looking for a new way of living. And it's really not a new way of living. This is really an old way of living. They're talking about this new experiment. You know, there's a lot of talk about people experimenting with living in community again. But actually, as Ezra Klein and this woman that he interviewed who wrote this book, called a communal way of something with friendship at the center, maybe a new way of living, reimagining life with friendship at the center. Go to the Ezra Klein show and find the episode. It was really, really interesting just a few weeks ago. So getting back to, like, this is an old way of living, and people, and what we're living in now is really the experiment that since the 50s of the nuclear family, right? This very lonely way of living where we think we have to do it all ourselves. And this experiment is failing. As you may know already, or as you'll hear more about it on the Ezra Klein show. So here, getting back to this kibbutz, here are these people that have lost their way of life. I mean, these people, they grew up, the wife of this family, it's called Family Meeting. That's the name of the, so this other, the one I heard this morning was This American Life called Family Meeting. That's the name of the episode. And so he's interviewing one particular family, the father and mother of these, I think they're three kids. And they've been through this horrible trauma. She lost her parents. They were murdered. They're now all living in a hotel with their fellow kibbutz members who survived. And they have decisions to make about whether they're going to stay with the group, whether they're going to go out on their own. The whole kibbutz as a group is trying to make, they've all got this hotel. They were given this one hotel that's just for them. And they've been living there for months. And they keep having these meetings as a family, one big family. and they talk, and, you know, what are they going to do going forward for the good for everyone, for the good of everyone? And some argued not to return to rebuild their kibbutz until they knew it was safe. And that, amazingly to me, included knowing that Palestinians would be treated fairly. It was amazing because despite their grief and their loss, their unimaginable loss, these parents didn't sound bitter. They were doing everything to stay together as a community. And and here they were, like, not bitter. They didn't know what to do, and they finally did make a decision that was not to stay with the community. But it was just so sad that they were losing this. They were losing this incredible community and a whole way of life. And it brought tears to my eyes. I was amazed at the humanity of people whose whole way of life and worldview had been threatened, had been upturned, overturned. And to know that in spite of everything, they were able to maintain their care and concern for another people, a people they could easily turn their wrath on for having betrayed their trust. Yet they were not bitter. They did not abandon their ideals. This week in Torah, we have a pretty ugly story, a story of loss and hope, loss of hope and of faith and a feeling of betrayal. The Israelites have been waiting for Moses to descend Mount Sinai for a long time, and they're done waiting. They have a history of grief and trauma, of having escaped from slavery and walked through a wall of water. I mean, God knows what that would be like, through a divided sea. And they're afraid. They've experienced and seen death and destruction beyond the imagination. And in their anxiety, they descend as a mob on Moses' brother Aaron and threaten him. "This guy Moses has betrayed us," they say in essence. "He said he was coming back, and we see no proof of it. Where is he? Make for us a god." And from this comes a calf made out of gold, a false god, one they can bow down to, one they can see. It's a terrible moment when Moses learns of this disaster and hears God's wrath. Moses confronts his own wrath as well. He smashes the tablets that are engraved by God's own finger that he's brought down from the mountain. Yet, he pleads for the people. Once he's calmed down, "Do not destroy them." And from all this, ultimately, once all is calm, comes a beautiful moment of deep connection. Moses has a heart-to-heart talk with God. He has a rational conversation. He says he wants to know God more deeply. He wants to understand God. And God, in return, gives Moses a sweet moment. He gives him this sweet assurance of revelation and protection, showing him only so much as he can observe safely, because to see God's face would be too much, and Moses would die. Since October 7th, many people have abandoned hope of any kind of reconciliation or the idea of Israeli Jews and Palestinians ever living peacefully together. We want to see proof in a moment when there appears to be none. Many have likewise abandoned hope of a world where people can live together and support each other in community. We're caught, both literally and figuratively, in the crossfire between political players. But I say we do have choices. We don't have to make false gods of these political powers, as if they're there to protect and keep us safe. We do not have to give in to forces that personally gain by keeping us afraid and full of hatred, ready to explode. And just like those members of Kibbutz Be'eri, we do not have to give in to bitterness and hatred. We do not have to react from our gut despite feeling vulnerable. We can choose instead to have rational, calm conversations. We can choose to make sweet connections and see what might be revealed. It may take stretching ourselves to maintain hope and commitment to an ideal, but we're capable of stretching. So I beseech you now, join me if you will. The ripple effects are immeasurable, and say amen. And to learn more about my work, go to my website, please, at realrabbinyc.com. Check it out and leave me a comment and subscribe if you're not already subscribed. And share my podcast with other people. Okay, until next time, Shabbat Shalom.